Okay, it's a great pleasure to introduce our next speaker, Michael Rapoport from Bonn. He will speak on arithmetic cycles on moduli spaces of abelian varieties.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much also for the invitation to Cambridge. It has been so long that I have been to Cambridge that, to be honest, I had almost forgotten how heavenly the place is. But it is. So my title is Algebraic Cycles on Moduli Spaces of Abelian Varieties, and I want to first put the whole thing in perspective, and I want to speak of algebraic geometry as a science that is done at least four levels. So the first level is that, by definition almost, algebraic geometry is a mathematical discipline concerned with the geometry of varieties defined by polynomial equations. This is how it started. So people started by looking at polynomials and maybe in a few number of variables, and they started with degree two. So I think the Greeks already knew quite a bit about this, and then they went on to equations of degree three, elliptic curves, and then degree four, and so on. But very soon they realized that this is not a very good way of proceeding. It's not true that if a variety has higher degree equations, it's more complicated than one with lower degree equations. So the next level of algebraic geometry is that one studies, that one singles out certain classes of varieties by numerical invariance. So this is how we meet curves of genus G, or we single out abelian varieties. So these are complete group varieties of a given dimension. Or we define K3 surfaces. This was a major discovery in the 19th century, that there is this class of surfaces that is different from everything else. Or in more recent time, Calabi-Yau manifolds, which also are a remarkable class inside the class of all algebraic varieties. So this is what I would call the second level, and of course this is still very active today. And then there's a third level for which we know exactly when it started. This is a famous paper by Riemann in which he introduced the moduli. And so the third level is that we study moduli varieties of varieties which are given by numerical invariance. So the most important moduli spaces that were already defined by Riemann are, first of all, the moduli space of curves of genus G. This is still very actively studied today. And then, on the other hand, the moduli space of polarized, or principally polarized, abelian varieties of a given dimension. And again, this is also a moduli space that is still studied intensively today. There are other moduli spaces, like the moduli space of vector bundles on a curve or on higher dimensional varieties, and so on. So this is what I would call the third level. And then there's the fourth level, which is that one studies algebraic varieties on these moduli spaces. So very often, there are, so to speak, more or less obvious algebraic cycles on these moduli spaces. So for instance, in the moduli space of curves, one could look at the locus of trigonal curves. So certain curves which have a certain, which admit certain projective embeddings, they make very interesting subvarieties of the moduli space. Or in arbitrary genus, there are these tautological algebraic cohomology classes which arise from the sheaf of relative differentials on the universal curve over the moduli space of genus G. And so these are very interesting classes that were defined by Mumford. He called them, or they were called, tautological classes. And there was a very interesting development maybe some 20 years ago, which started with Witten, and involved in particular Concewicz. So what was done in this development was that you take these tautological classes on the moduli space of curves of genus G, you form intersection numbers. So in other words, you intersect those tautological classes which are of complementary dimensions, so that you end up in the dimension, in the highest possible dimension. Then you form a certain generating series with these intersection numbers. This is done in a very clever way, which comes from physics. And so this was done by Witten, and he conjectured that this generating series is, in some sense, a modular form. I mean, this is not in the sense that that was just mentioned in the last lecture, but at least it means that these generating series satisfy some functional equations, which allow you, at least in principle, to calculate all these intersection numbers if you know only a few of them. And so one can ask, can one do something similar for the other big class of moduli spaces, namely the moduli space of Abelian varieties? And so my talk is concerned with this question. And in fact, there is a whole program of Kudler which concerns certain moduli spaces of Abelian varieties, not the one that Riemann thought about, but some derived moduli spaces. And there one finds, again, some tautological algebraic cycles, namely the locus where the universal Abelian variety has certain special properties. And then one can take these algebraic cycles, one can try to intersect them in complementary dimension and obtain in this way intersection numbers, then form a certain generating series and ask whether this is a modular form. And so this is this program of Kudler. And in fact, in some sense, his conjecture is much more precise than what Witten predicted, because Kudler in some sense gives precisely the modular form, and it's a modular form in the usual sense of the word. So I want to speak today about some results in this direction which are related to Shimura varieties attached to unitary groups of signature n minus 1, 1. And this is joint work with Kudler. And so let me start by defining the moduli spaces of Abelian varieties that this is concerned with. So I will denote by K an imaginary quadratic field which lies inside the complex numbers, and I will denote by OK the ring of integers in K, and then I will fix an integer R. So first of all, I fix an integer N, and then an integer R, which lies between 0 and N, and then I define the moduli space N minus R, which will lie over the spectrum of OK. Namely, it parameterizes triplets A lambda iota, where A lambda is the principally polarized Abelian variety, of dimension n. So A is the Abelian variety, lambda is the polarization, and iota is an action of this ring of integer on this Abelian variety. And we make two hypotheses on these pairs, on these triplets, namely, first of all, the Rosati involution So this is an involution on the ring of endomorphisms of A. This should preserve the subring the image of OK. So in other words, I get here a certain subring here, and it should take it into itself. And then, since this is always a positive involution, we know that it will induce their complex conjugation. And the second condition, this involves now the second integer R, is if you look at the action of OK on the Lie algebra of A, then this should be n minus r times the natural representation. So I mean the natural representation is given by the embedding of OK into C, and then r times the conjugate, the complex conjugate of this natural representation. Okay, and then so this is the moduli space that I'm talking about. Now it's not, this is actually not representable by a scheme, but rather by a stack. But this shouldn't worry us too much, because actually the physicists, they are well used to this. So when they talk about the moduli space of curves, this is also not a scheme, but it's only an orbifold. And the orbifold in algebraic geometry is the same thing as a stack. So I mean, actually, technically speaking, the linear Mumford stack. So I will neglect this aspect of the thing in the following, and so this is representable by something of relative dimension n minus r times r. Over spec OK. So let me give you an example. So let's take n equals to r 1 and r equals to 0. Well, in this case, we get something of relative dimension 0. And what is it? Well, in this case, we get a moduli space, which I will call M0, because it will turn up again in the sequel. This is just the moduli space of elliptic curves with complex multiplication by OK. And in this definition, one always imposes that the action of the tangent space is the natural one and not the complex conjugate one. So the associated scheme, I will denote this by the absolute signs, is simply the spectrum of the ring of integers in the Hilbert class field. OK. So in what follows, actually, I will only be interested in the case where r is equal to 1. So we look at m of n minus 1, 1. And I will just denote this by n if there is no confusion about the n. So what over the complex numbers, these moduli varieties are very well known, because they are uniformized by the complex n minus 1 Bohr. So they can be written as the quotient of the unit Bohr of dimension n minus 1 by a group of discrete transformations. And so one can do a lot of geometry on them. So in particular, let me give the simplest. So I mean, the next thing is we want to look at these moduli spaces and to look at these algebraic cycles on them. So let me give a simple example of an algebraic cycle on the corresponding variety over the complex numbers. Namely, we look at the locus VO1C, where the universal BM variety splits off an elliptic curve with CM by OK. So by this I mean that the BM variety, the universal BM variety, can be written as a product of an elliptic curve with complex multiplication by OK and another BM variety in such a way that, first of all, this is compatible with the actions of OK, and also the polarization is simply the product polarization of the standard polarization of an elliptic curve and another principal polarization on the complementary factor. So this actually comes up in Nature. So there's the following very famous example. If you take the field Q square root minus 3 and you take n is equal to 5, then in fact you look at the difference, so in other words the complement of this special cycle Z of 1, then this can be identified with the moduli space of non-singular cubic surfaces. In a highly non-trivial way, this is the result of ad hoc Carlson and Toledo. They have a construction which associates to any cubic surface an element on this moduli space, and they all land in the complement of this particular divisor. So it turns out that this is a divisor. And in fact, this gives a biholomorphic bijection between these two moduli spaces. So now I want to define these special cycles in general. And for this, so in general, these cycles, they were, I mean, here I look at the complex fiber. I extended scalars to C. In general, I will have to extend scalars from OK, so I mean this moduli space is after all is over spec OK, I have to extend scalars to the Hilbert class field, or in other words to M0. So before I can do this, let me introduce a certain invariant. So I take an object of our moduli space M and an object of M0, so this is just an elliptic curve with complex multiplication by OK, and then I look at the homomorphisms from E to A, which are equivariant with respect to the action by OK, and this is, it's just easy to see that this is a free OK module of finite rank. And furthermore, it has a Hermitian form which is given as follows. So if I have two such homomorphisms, X and Y, then I do the following. First I take X. This is a homomorphism from E to A. Then I compose this with the polarization of A. So now I have a homomorphism into the dual BM variety to A. And to this now I apply the dual homomorphism of Y. So this gets me back into the dual of the elliptic curve E. And then after all these are principal polarizations, so they are isomorphism, so I can just take lambda inverse, and in this way I get a homomorphism, an endomorphism of E, which is equivariant with respect to the action of OK, but this is nothing but OK itself. And it's easy to see that this is a Hermitian form which is positive definite. Okay, and now with this concept, I can now define the special cycles that I'm talking about. So I fix a positive integer this is always the product is always over OK, namely these are the pairs of A lambda iota, E lambda 0, iota 0, and then finally a homomorphism X from E to A, and the condition is that the inner product of X with itself is equal to T. And then it's easy to see that Z of t is a relative divisor on M cross M0 over OK. So all the fibers are divisors. And more generally, we can do this. We can do this for several cycles. So I take any Hermitian matrix, any number of variables, then I can define the cycle Z of t. So the first two variables are the same, and the last variable now will be an n-tuple of endomorphisms. So in other words, a homomorphism from e to the m to a, and the condition is simply the same. In other words, if I form all the inner products of all the entries, I get the matrix T. And this construction has a good recursive property, namely, if we take these divisors, and we take the intersection of M of these, then this is just the disjoint sum of those more general special cycles where T goes over all Hermitian matrices of this corresponding size. And of course, if you look at the definition, there's one condition on these matrices T, namely that the diagonal entries, they have to be given by the T1 up to Tm. Okay, and let me mention here the following proposition. This is not hard to show. Let M be at most equal to N. Okay, now there's an obvious, so I started here with a strictly positive integer. If I had also allowed the integer 0, then of course this wouldn't be very much. I mean, I would just get everything because I can just then take the 0. I mean, I have to take the 0 homomorphism. So, I mean, in order to have this a divisor, of course I have to make some non-degeneracy assumption. And in general, if I take this Z of t, I again have to make some non-degeneracy assumptions to say something about the relative, about the co-dimension of the cycle. So therefore, I'm assuming that this is a Hermitian matrix which is non-degenerate, so it just means that the determinant is non-zero, then the codimension of the complex fiber of Z of t in m cross m0 c is equal to m. And now this moduli scheme, I said it has relative dimension n minus 1 over spec OK. So therefore, I'm looking here at this as an arithmetic variety. So therefore, the total variety has dimension n. So in general, one would expect if one intersects n divisors on a variety of dimension n, that the intersection should be just this finite number of points. So in our context here, one would expect that if I take a Hermitian matrix of the full size, so in other words, size n, which is non-degenerate, that then you get, so this is the question. Let t be of full size, non-degenerate, is then z of t something zero-dimensional. So this is now on the whole arithmetic scheme. So we know by this proposition over there that the complex fiber is empty. So of course, these zero dimensions, these finitely many points, if this is true, they will certainly have to be in characteristic P. Now this turns out to be totally wrong. And so I want to formulate the corresponding theorem. And so to formulate the theorem, I will introduce a finite set of prime numbers associated with such a matrix. So I assume that T is of this kind, and I will define diff 0 of T. This is those prime numbers P which are inert in K, and such that the order in P of the determinant of T is odd. This is just some numerical condition. This gives a finite set of prime numbers that is naturally associated to this, such a non-degenerate matrix T. And so here's the answer to this question, the theorem. So this theorem comes in several parts. So first of all, so let T be such a matrix. Then first of all, if this diff set has more than one element, then the corresponding cycle is empty. So in other words, if it is non-empty, then there are only two possibilities. Either it contains a unique prime, or it contains no prime whatsoever. So this is case B. If diff consists of a unique prime P, then the cycle Z of T is contained in this, in the fiber and characteristic P of our moduli scheme, and in fact even in the supersingular locus. So I mean, as with any moduli space of Abelian varieties in characteristic P, there's always a closed subset, which is where the Abelian variety is in some sense the worst. This is why they're called super singular. But actually, it turns out that in some sense, this is where they are the best, because they are this is the locus where the Abelian varieties are closest to being just a product of elliptic curves with complex multiplication. And this locus, in many cases, can actually be described rather explicitly. So I think I will have time to make a drawing of this in low dimension. But before doing this, let me state the theorem completely. So then there's the third case. If the diff set is empty, then V of T is contained in the union over primes which are ramified of the supersingular locus in characteristic P. But there might be several primes which really occur. In other words, in this case, the cycle is in some sense not localized as far as the fibers are concerned. Okay, so I mean, the first case, the case A, is uninteresting because we don't want to speak about empty cycles. The second case is what we have investigated. The third case, we don't know much about. This is something for the future. And one reason we don't know much about this is that we have not a structure theorem for the supersingular locus when the prime P is ramified. So I will continue now with the case B. So assume case B. And also P bigger than 2, this is for technical reason. And then comes now the answer to this question that I asked up there. Namely, let T be GLN, okay, equivalent to a matrix of the form unit matrix of size N0 plus P times unit matrix of size N1, and so on. So this is what is called sometimes the Jordan normal form. So, I mean, Hermitian matrices have a very simple normal form. So this is the normal form of a Hermitian matrix. And then, in this case, Z of T is equidimensional of dimension n minus n0 minus 1 over 2 Gauss bracket of this number. So I mean, to compare this, the supersingular locus has dimension n minus 1 over 2. So in other words, unless this matrix T that we started with is as little divisible by P as possible, then in fact this the cycle will always have the full dimension of the supersingular locus. So in other words, the supersingular locus is an upper bound, and as soon as the matrix T is divisible by P, so this just means that this thing isn't there, we actually get a cycle which has this full dimension, which is somewhat surprising because you would think that actually when it's non-degenerate, you would only get a finite number of points. And so what is now the condition that this be equidimension, that this be of dimension zero. So this is given as follows. Furthermore, z of t is of dimension zero. So for this we say that t is non-degenerate. If and only if t is equivalent under GLN OK to a diagonal matrix where I have n minus 2 times 1s on the diagonal and then p to the a and then p to the b, where a and b are two integers and their sum a plus b is odd. So in other words, the case which you would imagine that you have the other extreme, maybe when t is actually a unit, so in other words, there's no p at all appearing in this, this is not actually possible because the determinant of t always has to be divisible by p. Okay, and so now I'm coming back to this question that I asked in the beginning, namely, we wanted to take these special cycles and then we wanted to take a bunch of these special cycles, in our case divisors, we want to take n of them and determine the intersection numbers. Well, we saw here in this theorem that there is a basic difficulty. In most of the cases, this intersection of these divisors will be degenerate. It will have too high dimension. But you can still ask this question in the case where this intersection is non-degenerate. So this is the third part of the theorem. So let T be non-degenerate. So then we know that Z of T is an Artin scheme, so it has dimension zero. And so we can write this, can be written as disjoint sum of local Artin schemes, So Z of T, disjoint sum over all points. This is true for every Artin scheme. And then the third statement in the theorem is each of these local schemes has the same length. Namely, length one half sum. So I write T in this normal form here, so in other words I diagonalize it, then I have the smaller of these two integers A and B, and so I form the sum I goes to from 0 to A P to the I times A plus b minus 2i plus 1. Okay. So in other words, we have a very concrete answer to this original problem, except that we have to make this assumption non-degenerate. And let me say a few words. I mean, maybe not about the proof, but I want to give you the impression that this is very concrete mathematics. So I want to draw the super singular locus. Of n after extended scalars to fb bar. So first of all, this super singular locus has in some sense a universal cover. So I can write this so to speak, a universal cover, which I denote by a tilde. So I can write this as a quotient of this universal cover by, so to speak, the fundamental group of this. So gamma is some discrete subgroup in some periodic Lie group. And so in some sense, there are two problems, namely what is gamma? And how does it act? And the other question, what is this? What does this universal cover look like? And so let me draw this. For n equals to 3. So in this case, we know that the total scheme is two-dimensional. The supersingular locus is one-dimensional. So it's just a bunch of curves. And what does it look like? Well, it has many irreducible components, which actually have a very interesting combinatorial pattern, which is dictated by some Bruyer-Titz building. And then each of these curves is a Fermat curve of the form x0 to the p plus 1 plus x1 to the p plus 1 plus x2 to the p plus 1. This has p cubed plus one rational points. So these are fp squared rational points. So they are p cubed plus one of them. So I have all these special points. And I'm drawing them because there are other components which have the same equations, and they cut this particular curve that I've singled out in these special points. And through every one of them, p plus 1 branches go. And so this never closes up. It goes out like a Bruyer-Titz building. And then I have a discrete group gamma, which acts on this Bruyer-Titz building, but it also acts on this scheme, which is huge, of course. It's only locally a finite type. But if you then form the quotient, you get this variety, which is in some sense, if this gamma is sufficiently torsion-free, it will just consist in a finite number of these curves here, which intersect in a complicated combinatorial pattern, which is dictated by this discrete group gamma. And one uses, in the proof, of course, one uses this structure. So in particular, we see here a very nice stratification of the supersingular locus. Namely, we have here these curves, and then there are these points. And in higher dimension, there are more strata. It starts with the highest dimension and goes down one by one. And one investigates which of these strata belong to the special cycle that one is looking at. Okay, so now I still have 10 minutes, or maybe even a little more, to say something about the generating series. So I said that this program of Kudla proposes to form a generating series with these special cycles, and then compare this with a modular form. So let me perhaps first explain what the generating series will be. I start with T1 up to Tn, some positive integers which are supposed to give me these divisors, which are here. So I'm now taking the extreme case where m is equal to n. Then I form this intersection of these divisors, and we know from this formula here that this will decompose according to these matrices T. And so there are two cases. One is where these matrices are singular. We cannot do anything about them. And then there are those where the matrix T is non-singular. And so for these, we can define a coefficient. So let T be a Hermitian matrix size n non-degenerate with diagonal these integers T1 up to Tn.
The same, I think.
The same.
No, you have T1, Tn, and T.
What?
Okay. No, it's the same. The Ti are the same.
Yes.
They are in Z.
Right. These are the diagonal terms of this matrix. And I'm also assuming that the diff set of T consists of a single element. I mean, otherwise one would have to think more of how to define the corresponding coefficient of this generating series. So the coefficient will be the following. So I have here these divisors. Question? Question?
Huh?
It will be preserved for eternity, by the way, if you ask a question. You have to be careful. Okay, so I want to define a coefficient of a generating series corresponding to T. And so here's the definition. I take the Euler-Poincaré characteristic of the following complex of sheaves on this cycle. Namely, I take O of Z1, O of Z of T1, and then I form the tensor product in the drive category sense. Of the structure sheaves of these cycles Z1 up to Zn. And then I multiply with log P. And this is for formal reasons, because otherwise this thing I'm going to say cannot possibly be true. And so I want to form now a generating series with these numbers here. And and then I want to compare it with the modular form. And so I now want to write down the modular form. So namely, we start with an Eisenstein series. For the group, for the quasi-split unitary group, U, N, N, which is the unitary group W, where W is the usual standard form. And so the Eisenstein series will be relative to this unitary group. So notice that here there's an obvious maximal parabolic, namely the Ziegle parabolic, the one which has as its unipotent radical exactly the Hermitian matrices of size n. This is exactly the relation. This is why we want to take this unitary group. Okay, so the Ziegle parabolic subgroup has the unipotent radical the Hermitian matrices of size n of k. So I mean, I should say this is of course a unitary group relative to the extension k of q. And then I form the Eisenstein series, which is some coefficient in order to make this. So Z is in the tube domain corresponding to this unitary group. In other words, Z is of the form U plus V, where U and V are some matrices, and where V, U plus I times V, where U and V are some real matrices with certain symmetry properties, and where the matrix V has some positivity property. So this is the corresponding symmetric domain corresponding to this real group. Then S is a complex parameter, and phi is a carefully chosen Siegel-Weil section. And so there's some four factor, which is not so interesting here. And then there is a sum over gamma modulo the intersection with the Siegel parabolic. So gamma is the integral matrices in U and N. And then I have the determinant of Cz plus D to the minus n times absolute determinant Cz plus D to the S or minus S times phi of gamma S. So this is the Eisenstein series that we are concerned with. So I'm not explaining here what the choice of this function phi involves, but it's made carefully so that the following theorem holds. So first of all, I've normalized everything so that Z as S equal to 0 is the center of symmetry for the functional equation. And in fact, the value of this function is equal to 0 at S equal to 0. And so the next interesting thing is, what about the derivative? So let's consider the Fourier development, Fourier expansion . This has the following form. So first of all, it only goes over the integral Hermitian matrices, and then there are some coefficients, which of course depend on t, but they also could depend on the imaginary part in general, times q to the t. So q to the t, this is simply the exponential of 2 pi I trace t times z. So this is just like in the Siegel case, everything works exactly the same. So then first of all, if t is non-degenerate, then this coefficient, in fact, is constant. So then A of T, V of Z, equal to A of T, is independent of Z. And furthermore, if t is non-degenerate, And the diff set consists of a single prime p, not equal to 2, of course. Then this coefficient a of t is equal to a constant times this coefficient, or maybe, and also I have to assume, of course, that the diagonal of t are these integers t1 up to tn that I'm given in advance. Then this Fourier coefficient is equal to this quantity that are defined there purely in geometric terms. So here c is a constant, some constant, which is independent of everything. So this is just, in some sense, a consequence of the question of how to normalize this Eisenstein series. And so we see that if we look at this Eisenstein series, I mean, if I had started with the Eisenstein series, and Kudla, actually, he likes the Eisenstein series. I like this modular scheme. So if you start with the Eisenstein series, you look at its Fourier coefficients, then you can ask yourself, can you interpret in geometric terms all the coefficients? And so what this theorem is telling you is that if T is non-degenerate in this sense that it, in its Jordan decomposition, there's this large block of the unit matrix, then in fact the answer is yes, and it's equal to this coefficient that I defined in geometric terms up there. But of course, one can ask also about other coefficients. So the very first question is this true also if I drop the assumption that this matrix is non-degenerate, but I just assume that it is non-singular? So then I get a coefficient out of this Eisenstein series which is independent of z, so this is just a number, and this number that I defined up there also makes perfect sense in this case, and the question is this relation still true? So I conjecture, we conjecture that this is always true. But it would require, and this is why I had to take this derived tensor product up there, it would require a study of degenerate intersection of divisors on an n-dimensional variety. So this is not quite easy, but I think it is a doable problem, and I hope that somebody can do something with it. Okay, so I stop here.
Thank you. Are there questions, comments?
This is a general philosophy, but there should be always.
Well, always depends on what you mean by always.
But for Shimurav, right?
No. I mean, there are sort of two series of examples where Kudla conjectures this. One is the variety, Shimura varieties which are associated to S to U N1. This is the example that I've been talking about. And the other is the series of examples associated to the orthogonal group of index n minus 2, 2. But the problem with this other series of examples is that as soon as n gets large, there's no arithmetic model known for this. So this here was a very simple definition of this moduli scheme, and we know quite a bit about, for instance, the supersingular fiber and how it reduces and so on. Whereas for the orthogonal groups, we cannot do anything for higher dimensions. So this is why we now turned our attention to this unitary group. But I don't think it's true that for any Shimura variety, at least there's no program for this. So maybe there is something there, but I don't know of anything.
Another question, do they generate something, the Kermerji class?
Yeah.
Because for him, this is a usual question.
This is a question that you can ask also to these people who are doing these moduli space of curves. So in other words, we are playing very close to the shore. We don't know how many cycles, relative to all cycles, we are actually looking at. So of course, there's this famous theorem of Hilzebruch-Sagier, which shows that in the Hilzebruch-Sagier case, we actually look at all cycles, but nobody, I think, has any. I think that even for the case of unitary group, we know that these are not all cycles, but I don't know how many relative to all of them there are. But similarly, for the modular space of curves, I think nobody has any idea of how large the space of tautological cycles is.
Other questions? Not the case, so let's thank the speaker again.